You please join me in prayer. Heavenly Father, Divine Mother,
Beloved Jesus Christ,
Blessed Master,
Dearest Mother,
Saints and sages of all religions,
I bow to all of you.
Free my life from all obstacles.
And give me physical, mental, and spiritual development.
Make my mind thy temple.
Make my heart thy altar.
Make my love thy home.
Be thou the only king.
Reigning on the throne of my consciousness. Amen. I'm sure most of you have heard, but reading from Brianna's email here, we are overjoyed to share the news of the arrival of our new baby girl, Aurelia Rose, born at home on November 3rd at 2:26 p.m. A vibrant, gentle child with long hair and peaceful countenance. At birth, she weighed 7 pounds, 10 ounces, and is 21 inches long. She is truly a gift for all this world. Love and blessings, Brianna, Scott, and Lily and Grace. So, isn't it wonderful to have new life come in? At a time when we, of course, have been focused upon Christine leaving the body. And I thought that I would read from Papa Ram Dass, entitled, Death is False. You may notice it's an unusual writing by Papa. There are some where he talks in first person, or rather using I and my. My thought flies like a bird, carrying the message of peace to all the worlds. A light goes out of my eyes that illuminates the entire cosmos. My heart responds to the rhythm of a heavenly music that resounds through all space. The angels hover around me, the devas of the other worlds, the embodiments of the omnipresent spirit. They look human. But they are my God in so many forms. The deva, man, bird, and beast are all the varied shapes taken by my God. They are all sweet and good. I see him and am lost in him. I hear him and am attuned with him. I touch him and become one with him. In all planes of life, I am united with him. With outstretched arms, he beckons me and I rush to him. And I am caught in his ecstatic embrace. I shut my eyes in the intoxication of joy. Oh, beloved, that is all I could say. Oh, my Lord, my God, my Supreme Mother, I am eternally thine. I am thyself. How strange. I am thyself, yet I am thine. When I sit silent with eyes closed, I behold all the worlds and beyond in me, and myself in all the worlds and beyond. Whenever I am before anybody, I look at him as myself. His movements are mine. When he talks and acts, it is all myself. Death is false. Every particle of the body in all of its states is ever intensely alive, dust or ashes. Soul, body, universe, all beings and things are all one. Matter is spirit, spirit is matter, all is he and his expression. Spirit is still, but it sings sweetly, and universes are born. They live in the infinite ocean of the spirit, like ice floating on water. all minds and all bodies, you are dear to me. You are made of my substance. My substance is omnipresent, immutable spirit. Still there are ripples in me. They are the planets, stars, and stellar spheres, ever in motion, whirling through the glowing etheric atmosphere. All hail to thee, the one truth, the one reality. This is a quote from Divine Life. What an ecstatic state of realization Papa was in. As he writes these words, we feel ourselves communing with him and experiencing what, to some degree, he must have experienced in that state. Truly, this world is but a shadow of the great world that is the full expression of Spirit Divine. We are, in our bodies, just a tiny little thumbprint of the vast Spirit that resides within us. We become so focused upon this body and upon this mind that we begin to think of it as our all. I left some instructions for Christine before I left, and one of them was that she should never let go of the idea of perfect health, that even if she should transition out of this body and go beyond, when she carries that thought of perfect health, you see, that's what she takes with her. That is the creative seed for everything that will come. It is a difficult thing when the body is ailing, when it's not behaving in the way that we would like it to. And yet, she kept that all the way through. One of her daughters was saying, well, Mom, it's getting towards the end. You can just let go and let go with all of this. And she said, no. She said, I'm keeping my mind on that perfect health. And so it goes beyond reason, in a sense, that you, to all appearances, are not long for this world. But in spirit, you see, we are eternally young. We have perfect bodies. We are perfect in God already. And as we hold on to that, no matter what the condition of this body may be, we tune in to that perfection. We tune in to that perfection. And through that attunement, we harmonize ourselves with that perfect truth that is superior to this body, this life that we call in this world. And it is the eternal self within ourselves. The other thing that I instructed her to do was to keep her mind on God always. And that if the time came for her to leave this body, that she should remain focused on that. Now, in the last days before leaving the body, she was not speaking anything at all. And she could follow with her eyes people around in the room, but she was just simply too weak. But the night before she left the body, George and her daughters and Honor were all in the room together. And they just sensed a tremendous kind of presence there. And George asked that they would all chant together, and he led everybody in chanting. They had a tape of Ram Nam, and they usually would turn it off at nighttime, but the decision was made to go ahead and let it run all through the night. When Angela and Andrea came in the morning, the tape was still running, and Christine was saying something. She hadn't been saying anything the previous day at all. And as they tried to make out what she was saying, it seemed to them that she was chanting, Om Shri Ram, Jai Ram, Jai Jai Ram. And then as Andrea took some ice and put it onto her lips, because her mouth was very dry, it's the only way that she could get any liquid. And so she put it onto her lips, and then she began to chant, Om. Om, Om. And as she uttered this, then she started into a particular breathing pattern that Angela was a little reluctant to talk about, but she, for all the world in her mind, it sounded like a Kriya breath. And there were several of those, and then that was the end. And she exited out of the body. Now, from our human standpoint, that is a sad event. But from a spiritual standpoint, it is a tremendous event. It is something that all yogis aspire to attain. And even those who are doing great penances and living out in remote areas, they seek to have such a time of leaving. When I was at Anandashram, Swami Muktananda asked me to speak a few words about Christine and the way that she left. And while I did that, I read from the Bhagavad Gita, and I'd like to read that to you as well. And in the hour when life is ending, with mind set fast and trustful piety, drawing still breath beneath calm brows unbending, in happy peace that faithful one doth die, in glad peace passeth to Purusha's heaven, the place where they who read the Vedas name Aksharam, ultimate, whereto have striven saints and ascetics, their road is the same. That way, the highest way, goes he who shuts the gates of all his senses, locks desire safe in his heart, centers the vital airs upon his parting thought, steadfastly set, and murmuring Om, the sacred syllable, emblem of Brahm, dies meditating me. For who, none other gods regarding, looks ever to me, easily am I gained by such a yogi, and attaining me they fall not, those Mahatmas, back to the birth, to life which is the place of pain, which ends, but take the way of utmost blessedness. So this is the highest way. In order to leave the body in such a way requires a lifelong practice. We cannot just think that in the last moments we can utter Om, and no matter how else we lived our life, that's our ticket to heaven, so to speak. Because you never know what kind of thoughts are going to occur at those last moments. Will you have fear? Will there be regrets? Are there things that are left undone that your mind goes back to? Do you think of attachment to your loved ones and so on? Or in that moment, because you have so purified the mind, you come into that perfect apprehension of the divine life within you. You set aside all the things of this world. You focus completely on God and giving yourself over to God. As Jesus said when he was up on the cross, he said, "It is finished. It is finished." And when you have that sense, you see, you fight for life, you fight for perfect health. But when you sense that that moment has come and that it is finished, then you set aside all the things of the body, all the things of this world, and you focus your mind completely and totally upon God in that moment. And when you do, you sail through this ajna and you go directly into the highest realms of divine consciousness. This is what has been promised. And there are no compulsory returns back to this earth. Isn't that a wonderful thing? And a wonderful promise. And it is true. When Christine left this body, with my interior vision, I saw some of our masters and our guru lineage. And they were so pleased. They were so happy about the way that Christine had exited her body. And she is a trailblazer. She has shown us the way to exit this body in a way that has grace, in a way that is really taking her all the way to God. Now, it doesn't mean that everything is perfectly worked out, but she's not required to come back into this lifetime again. She is freed from that. But, you know, being in this lifetime, one way or the other, isn't the ultimate. Oftentimes in India, it's talked about getting off of the wheel of birth and death. And certainly we don't want to have to come back because we have to. But one time I was in meditation and I was thinking about whether I'd like to come back to this earth or not. And I thought, no, I wouldn't. And it's a tough place, isn't it? It's very difficult. And when you take this body off, God showed me one time a transition that I made where I left this body. And leaving this body was like casting off a really heavy lead overcoat. And suddenly I was free. I could move wherever I thought. I had that freedom. And it felt so light. It felt so healthy. It was everything good. And when you look back on this body, you're not sorry to leave it. If it served you well, it's kind of like the old jalopy. You've driven the last miles and it's not maintaining you very well and it's perhaps backfiring and having other kinds of difficulties that you just know that the car is near its end. And when you let it go, if it served you well, you have gratitude for it, but you just simply close the door and leave it behind. And similarly with this body, you just simply exit out of this body and leave it behind. And then the real question is, have you fulfilled what you came into this world to do? Now, different souls give themselves different assignments. For those of us who are on the spiritual journey, upon this spiritual path, what Mother called the path of the last mile, we are here in order to get that fullest of realizations. We have members from this group here who are over at Anandashram right now. And I wrote to them and suggested that they go with the same attitude that Mother went when she went to the ashram. She and her husband sold everything that they had. And Mother was absolutely determined not to come back until she had that fullest of realization. She wanted every drop of it. She had felt with Master that many times when she went to see him that she had physical problems, she had problems in this world, and she would talk those over with him, and he was of tremendous benefit to her. He saved her life not once, but many times. She had TB, which at the time was a very serious condition, and many people died from it. And even if you didn't die, you had to go into long treatment and go away from everybody, and so she had these two spots the size of half dollars on her lungs. And she cabled down to Master, and she asked him that he would pray for her, and he wrote back and said that he would. The next time she went in to go to see the doctor, there were no spots left on her lungs. She also had a very large cyst that she was told that if it burst, it would kill her, and that it needed to be operated on right away. But before she agreed to the operation again, she telegraphed down to Master and told him what the situation was, and he said that he would pray for her. And the next time when she went back to the doctor, there was no cyst there at all. So these are the things that actually happened in Mother's life. But when she went to the ashram, she felt that she hadn't gotten all the fullest spiritual benefit. She had not attained the full realization. She was in a very high state of realization already, what is called nirvikalpa samadhi. And actually, Master holds that out as, in many of the writings, to be the highest form of samadhi. But when you read the lessons carefully, there is Brahma nirvana that he holds out as even higher. And in that state, you do not go in, nor do you come out. You are established. It is what Papa called Sahaja Samadhi. And so she went because she wanted that highest state and nothing less. She wanted perfect apprehension of God. And she was willing to do whatever it cost in order to attain that state. When we approach God with that kind of fervor, with that kind of attitude, we're not mixed in our ambitions. We're not a little bit toward the spirit and a little bit towards the world. We want God with everything that we have. It doesn't mean because we are householders, we do live in this world. So it doesn't mean that we don't live in this world. But where is your heart? Where is your attention? You can do anything in this world and have at least a portion of your attention upon God alone. It doesn't mean that you have to completely step outside of this world. If that is necessary, then God will arrange it for you. Otherwise, your life, your sadhana, your path is right where you are. Now, when I was at the ashram, when I first got there, Papa gave me a wonderful gift because as the first few days that I was there, everywhere that I looked, I saw that it was Papa who was literally acting through every individual who was there. This universal vision is something that can come in a personal way, such as there was another time when I saw Mother in every person. I was on a university campus going to college at the time, and through no effort of my own, really, suddenly it was as if all the barriers that surrounded me normally dropped, and I saw God in every form. I saw the image of Mother on the chest of everybody that I saw. And I realized how many barriers I had between myself and others. The dual nature of ego is desire nature and fear. They're the two sides of one coin of the ego. And they keep us separated from God. There's no absolute reason for us to hang on to any of that. And indeed, it is we who hang on to that ignorance, to that separation. But in this experience, suddenly the barriers all dropped. And I knew what it was to walk in this world as a free person, no longer imprisoned by fear and desire nature, and seeing God within every person that I met. So in those first few days at the ashram, that is what I experienced, that is what I felt, that is what I saw. And it's delightful, really. You're not opposed to any personality. You're not opposed to anything that's going on at all, because it's all Papa, you see. It's all God. Now, you can see this in the impersonal sense as well, and not necessarily connected with any individual such as Papa. But you see the one universal life, as Papa was talking about in his writing, in which you see all people as yourself. It's a tremendous experience that you meet people and you feel yourself that it is you yourself who is acting through them, not in your ego sense, but as God within you. And you feel everything that is a part of you. And the trees that are growing and the grass, everything that exists is an expression of divine consciousness, and you are intimately a part of that. And you observe that deep spirit living itself out through all forms, and you are that. And yet, as Papa says, you are also in relationship with God. You are God, and you are in relationship with God. Now, this may seem very confounding to the human reason. How can them both be true at the same time, and yet it can't be? And so you feel yourself moving through this world. And in one sense, you are the same as you always have been. You have a body. You have a personality. You go through this world, and you have to endure certain things. You have to make other things happen, and so on. But you are also that perfect spirit, that immutable spirit, that beginningless and endless spirit. And it is manifesting in you and in everyone that you meet. This is the universal vision, and it is tremendous. And it strips away everything that you have had in the past that has separated you from God. So I had that experience, and it was wonderful. And it was a time of communion with God. But one thing that I noticed, And it was something that was different for me this time. Perhaps a primary reason why God took me on this pilgrimage is because these different experiences came, and they were many wonderful experiences, many. And yet, there is an interior part of me that I was keenly aware of all through it that was unchanged. That it was not a different God experience than what I have right here. It is exactly the same. And it takes on various expressions. It takes on various ways of manifesting itself. But it is all the one same life, moving through and through and through. And so when you attain this divine consciousness, you see, then it doesn't make any difference in one sense whether you're here or whether you're there. It makes no difference at all. And yet, God delights in taking you from place to place. Papa said something in the writing that if you have a body, that means you still have some, you're still responding to a desire nature. And the difference is that when you realize your oneness with God, you no longer respond to your own personal desire nature alone, but rather you experience God's desire as manifesting through you. And this is a wonderful experience as well, because now you feel as if your body, your mind, your heart, everything about you is the outer glove, and God is the inner hand. And God is able to express himself in all these different ways. And if he wants you to go here, he prompts you to go there. And if he wants you to go there, then you do that as well. It is total freedom, I tell you. And there is nothing in this world that can hold a candle to it. So these are the things that came. And also, when we first arrived and went up to Ma's ashram, a very surprising thing happened. Ma took us greatly in hand. Both Carla and I were keenly aware. We had gone there for Larhi Mahasha's Mahasamadhi Day, and we had a wonderful time at Kesha Ashram. And it was different than I thought it was going to be, because I had hoped to meet many of my friends from the Yogada Satsang group there, but they had no special occasion that day. In fact, they weren't going to mark any of the days with any particular celebrations in the way that they had back in 1998. I don't know if it's the same people, or perhaps people have rotated through. And so they're not celebrating it in the same way that we did then. And so I didn't meet with some of those people, but God had something different for me in mind. Because Ma took us in hand, and she guided us from here to there, and she kept us mostly at her ashram. It's her Mahasamadhi temple that is there. And her presence, her imprint of her thoughts and spiritual being were so strongly upon us, I had never experienced her in that way before. And it was wonderful. She's a tremendous soul, of course, a great avatar. And someone who came in the first part of the century in order to help keep this world safe. It was in really terrible shape. Two major world wars and eventually the atom bomb that was created, and the potential, the actual destruction and the potential for destruction was tremendous. And there's several tremendous souls who came into this world to help with it. I started to tell you that I was thinking that I didn't ever want to come back to this world. Thank you very much. Because I knew what it was like beyond this world, and it's such an easier path to go. But in my mind, as I sat meditating, I had the thought come to me, well, what if Mother came to me, and as she would say sometimes, she batted her eyelids at me and said, oh, I have a special dispensation to go down and a special work to do. Would you come with me, please? Could I even imagine myself saying no to it? I'd say, of course. When do we go? Of course, later on, then I'd think, what in the world did I get myself into? Because it's going with mother is always an adventure. And she's fearless. Fearless. There's a new Swami at the ashram that we like very much. He used to take the lunch tickets and the dinner tickets, and he always had a smile on his face. And his name is Swami Abhayananda now. And Abhay means fearless, I was told. So anytime I would see Swami Abhayananda, I would say, fearless! He would get a big laugh out of that. And our other favorite Swami there is Swami Sannyasananda, who we've known before he took sannyas, and we love him very much. He had broken his foot just before we got into the ashram, so he was sitting up. He's sitting up where next to where the talks used to be given in the afternoon, and there's steps going up there, and he's sitting up there with his feet up because his foot had to be elevated. And he had all kinds of people around him. And I would say to him, Swami Maharaj, you look like a king sitting up there. He has a great sense of humor, so he loved hearing that. And so every time I saw him, I would pranam with my hands above my head and say, Swami Maharaj. And it's fun. It's fun. It's just so many tremendous souls are there at that ashram. And it's all there in order to help people to put their minds completely on God. Not everybody takes advantage of it. Mataji wanted all the meals prepared, wanted to have comfortable rooms for people. They're very sparse, but they are clean and comfortable. The mattresses are not very thick. And so it's sparse in that way. But absolutely everything is provided for you that you need. And the whole idea is to come there and to really get the fullest benefit by being there. Put your mind on God. To chant God's name. What a wonderful way to be able to focus on God. And it's there's many families that come there. And it's good for families because it's not all silence and quiet, which would oftentimes be difficult for children. But people walk and they sing. And really, what's more natural for a child than to sing and to walk with their parents and to learn to focus the mind upon God? It truly is a spiritual powerhouse. There are these different places in India. They are here as well, but India really has such a long tradition and such a powerful tradition. There, they have kept alive the idea that you can consciously realize God. Realize God. Now, not everybody embraces that idea. In fact, I would say most don't. But for those who do and rise up and attain that divine consciousness, a tremendous power is infused into the land, into the devotees. And that power goes out. And it is wonderful. It is tremendous. It was interesting in going there that there are different souls there that were really having difficulty. And for some reason, God took this form there and he was able to be of help through this form. And people who had gotten stuck and were having difficulty, suddenly things were released and you could tell the difference. Instead of a great heaviness hanging around them, suddenly there is a great light. Now, it was their own doing. They wanted that freedom. They wanted that change. And so they had faith in God in this form. It's a strange thing in a way. But it's true. And so God took this form here to there and performed some services there. We thought we would be there still with the devotees who are there. As it turned out, it was just Carla and I there for the time that we were there. And when others were about to arrive, God took us away. But I felt strongly to come back. I felt strongly to come back that there were those who were in need. And so there was no choice in my mind. that this form must return. And so when you feel your oneness with God, God can pick you up and put you here and put you there. There's that wonderful story that Mother tells of the Methodist minister who was there at the ashram at the same time she was. And he had read all of Papa's stories about how Papa would go out and start chanting Ram Nam, and then he'd go on these tremendous adventures. And these remarkable things would happen. So he thought he'd like to be in for some of that adventure. So he told Papa, he says, next time Ram tells you to go someplace, take me. So Papa agreed. So one day Papa said, Ram is directing Ram Dass to go across this field. Oh, what's going to happen? Maybe they'll never return. Who knows? All the different things that could happen. You could just sense his palpable anticipation. And so they get halfway across the field, and suddenly Papa turns around and is going back to the ashram. Total confusion. What? What is this? Why are we turning around, Papa? Ram told Ram Dass when he got halfway across the field that he should return. Now, Papa could think, oh, should I respond to that? What will this fellow think of me? You know, what would we think? Would my credibility be there? Ram has told us to go across the field. You get halfway across and you return home. Papa, of course, had no concern for what other people thought. He was a perfect tool in the hands of the divine. What a tremendous, powerful story that is. That for each one of us to become such a tool in God's hand. Ramakrishna used to say that you are the machine and God is the operator of the machine. Your part is just to simply attune yourself to what the operator is seeking to fulfill in you. Now, we have so many fears about that. Well, will God tell us to leave everything behind and we won't have any clothes and we won't have any money and we'll have to beg? You see where the mind takes us to? Possibly, but not likely. But those are the kinds of fears that will come up. Or will I starve to death? Or will I freeze to death? What kind of problems will entail? Peace Pilgrim was such a tremendous example because here is a woman in her mid-50s and she leaves her hearth and home and sets out with just the clothing that is on her back, just cotton sweatshirt and pants and tennis shoes. No money, nothing that she takes with her at all. And in all the years that she wandered, this was in the 1950s, early 50s. I met her in the late 1970s. She told me that she had never been sick one day. Exposed to all the elements. Out walking. First 10,000, then 25,000. And then she just kept right on going. And she kept on going right up until the last day when God arranged for her to be on a head-on collision and instantly killed. And it's the way that he chose to take her. Her mission was fulfilled. But she was that perfect tool. She would just attune herself and feel, okay, God, what is it that you want for me? And so when we live like that, the fears do come up. But if we can set all those things aside, and say, all right, God, we're on a grand adventure. And now where do we go? Where do we go? And like Christine, at the very last moment, we don't think of death as an end, but rather it's the beginning of a new adventure. All right, God, where are we going to go now? What's the new adventure? What's the fun? Sri Yukteswar describes in Master's description of when he resurrected, that when people leave the body in the realm where he was serving at, Hiranyaloka, a high astral planet, it's like an astral heaven, really. It's up above the normal astral planes. But that when people are ready to leave, essentially what we would call die. Then there's a huge party that is thrown, And he says, God will manifest as any form that is especially dear to that devotee. And that it's a celebration, it's an acknowledgement that you've come so far and now you are ready to go on to the next stage. And you see, really, when we have lived our lives fully, when we have completed the mission that God has given to us, then it really is a kind of a graduation. When my father passed away, he never had a real intense spiritual inner life. He attended his church, and in the later years, he was on the board of directors because that's a comfortable, he's a businessman. So being on the board of directors was a comfortable kind of role for him. And it's not that he didn't think anything at all about it, but that it wasn't, through most of his life, a very strong kind of prompting. He had come to be a business person. He had always wanted that. But he was honest. He had a lot of integrity. And it was a value that he held out in high regard. He was not a respecter of persons in the sense of what was the color of your skin or anything else. It's, are you an honest person? Do you have integrity? Are you as good as your word? Those were the important things to him. And what God showed to me is that he had great growth in this lifetime. Nothing overtly spiritual in that sense. But he came with a mission for himself, and he fulfilled that mission. And that frees him up to move forward and to take on new missions, take on new lessons in future lifetimes. And it's good. It's good. So we can't measure everyone as to whether they measure up to what we think the ideal of living is. That's our ideal. And certainly we're accountable for living up to that highest ideal. But each and every individual has their own lessons that they have set out to learn in this lifetime. And so they cannot be measured by somebody else's measuring stick. We can only really measure ourselves. And are we, each one of us, living up to that highest ideal? So let us think on this moment of transition, of moving out of this life, in this sense, that it is a completion of everything that has gone on beforehand, and that it's how we live this life that will really tell as to how, when the moment comes, we leave this life. And if we live it well, we will leave it well. And that's the truth. That's the truth. So let us learn to fall in love with God. You know, so many people came to me at the ashram, devotees, such sincere people there. They would ask me, they'd say, give me blessings that I might be more disciplined. And I know what they mean. But I would tell them, I'd say, better than discipline is love. Because you'll do things out of love that you might do for a little while out of discipline, but then it begins to fall away. But when you have a sincere and deep love for God, for Spirit, you'll do anything as a result of that. So what I pray for you is that you have real devotion, a real feeling for what you want in God, and that you let nothing stand in your way of having that eternal romance with God. Because that's the greatest thing in this life. And it's the greatest attractor. And it will get us through places where pure discipline is unlikely to. So you can pray, I would say, for that devotion, for that bhakti, for that attraction to God that is more powerful than anything else in this world. In the early morning hours, you can hear the mosque at the ashram there. They have the big loudspeakers, and they're calling out the prayers. And part of the morning prayer is that, awake, arise, prayer is better than sleep. That's what they're saying. Prayer is better than sleep. You can just see yourself having a love affair with your mattress and your pillow and have that voice come out and say, prayer is better than sleep. Master used to say that if you had not slept for so long, so many days, and suddenly you could just lay down and go to sleep, and just how blissful that would be, how much peace that would be. Finally, you're able to drift off into sleep after so many days of not being able to sleep. He says that's what God is like. That's what knowing God, it's that kind of delicious peacefulness that you're slipping into. Only much more than that. Much more than that. So let us have that divine love affair with God, so that when we leave this body, we immerse ourselves into Him. And we find ourselves merged into that eternal being. And that is not a new experience. That we've been doing that daily. As St. Paul said, I die daily in the Christ. What does that mean? It means he merged his little self into the great ocean of God every day. And you could say, in a way, that he died daily. He let go of everything that he felt was his. And he knew God omnipresent. And then, as Mother would say, the ocean would gather her back up and create a form again and deposit it on the shore so that she could tell that everybody, she could tell everybody that God was life and life was God. It's the entirety of everything. And that is a state to be realized. Om Shri Ram, Jai Ram, Jai Jai Ram. Victory to God. Victory to the light. So happy to be back. Be with all of you. Om Shri Ram. Those last ohms reminded me of something that Rebecca had written about when Brianna gave birth, that she was, I had told her that I, before I left, that I'd be the breath of her own breath during labor, and that she had some of the predictable pain and difficulty that comes with that, but that in the last moments before the birth, she writes, transforming instantly into the pristine, clear-minded echoing of melodious ohms, bringing the final stage to perfect completion in birth, eloquently synchronized with Larita's gentle divine hands from start to finish. So can you imagine coming into this world to the accompaniment of melodious ohms? Sounds a lot better than the doctor picking you up upside down and giving you a slap on the bottom. Hmm. As we attune ourselves to those melodious ohms, just feel the vibration inside of yourself. The real key in chanting is to feel the vibration of it, because that's where the peace, the bliss, the intoxicating aspect of it comes. Not just up in the head chanting, but listening to the sound that your own body makes as you sing, and then transferring that so that even mentally, when you're singing, you feel that same vibration, and it goes out and out through all the cells of your body. That transformative power of Om and of the name of God has the power to lift you up into God absolute. It sounds like a very big promise, but it's true. And so let us learn to fall in love with God. So feel that attraction, that upliftment, that bliss, that peace. That becomes stronger than any other desire in life. And all we want to do is merge into that complete oneness with God.